President Buchanan. We had scheduled Department of Education for 3:30, and we've got a conflict because there's a 3 o'clock class or presentation on recalibration in 302, and there's members here that would like to attend, and we want to make sure that Superintendent Hill has an opportunity to attend to both events. So the present plan is to shift our schedule a little bit later, so we would do start at 4 o'clock. That would allow folks to get up to the 302 to participate or at least listen to the recalibration exercise report, and then we'll start here at 4 o'clock. So we'll be off from 3 to 4. We'll come back at 4 to hit the that. If there's anything else that anybody would like to talk about, otherwise we'll get started with President Buchanan. Thank you for being here today. And Don Richards, that one of the many people that you've stolen from our organization, and we're starting to notice the bleed. I think the governor's office is too, with Ryan back there, and it's not gone unnoticed that you're taking all of our best employees. President Buchanan.
We have provided the Joint Appropriations Committee two handouts. The first provides some additional information about each of our supplemental budget requests, and the second provides a response to each of the 11 questions that this committee made during the last time that we appeared before you. I think that was December 15th. Recall that in December we also provided your committee with information about UW's AML request. We have additional copies of that previous handout if anyone wishes another. I will confess, behind me is Ryan Lance and Doug Van Zandt, Vice President for Administration as well. And without objection, I would simply proceed through our supplemental budget, Mr. Chairman.
Since these, whatever order you would like, but I'm kind of interested in your taking us through your handouts, too. Did you want to weave them in, or you want to take us through the handouts?
Mr. Chairman, I think if you follow the handout titled Explanation and Background, 2011-2012 Supplemental Budget, each of the items, we can walk through those, and each of the items also reference to your budget book.
Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the first item in our supplemental budget request was a one-time $6 million request with regard to the increased group insurance employer share cost associated with a 20% increase in health care premiums.
And you provided then an explanation with respect to the history, and that is the breakdown between what A&I was reporting to us as their issues and theirs. And why don't you summarize that for us, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, you recall that the health insurance split for the state of Wyoming is 85-15, 85% paid by the employer, 15% paid by the employee. In 2011, an increase, which we were notified of in September, was put in place. Our employees are presently paying for that portion of the increase, which is represented by their share. The 85% increase, which is the university's share for those health insurance cost increase, we estimate for the 2011-2012 biennium, for this biennium, to represent $5.95 million increase in our health care costs. We have had multiple conversations over an extended period of time with the budget office. I think we disagree with the budget office over some historical issues related to how we have prepared and managed our budget over time. Those issues, I think, came to sort of a full head in our discussions with the governor and the budget office this fall. The issue really boils down to the use of employer-paid benefits and the management of UW's block grant. UW's block grant puts us in a different category than other state agencies, and as we have done for more than four biennia, we move dollars from one category to another in our budget when we know we are able to do that, and when we have pressing needs for which it makes sense to do that. We have had excess funds in our employer-paid benefits in the past, and we have shifted those resources when necessary, basically to cover increased costs in operations and maintenance, primarily utility costs at the university and for some maintenance work that needed to be done. I think the issue is that the budget office believes we should have set aside those funds, not treated them as part of the block grant. And had we been doing that for the last 8 years, we might not be in front of you with this request. And I think that assessment is accurate, except for the fact that for the last 8 years we have been managing our block grant with full knowledge of the budget office in terms of how we used and how we shifted employer-paid benefits. Moving forward, if this committee and the legislature would like us to manage our employer-paid benefits differently, we can do that. At this point in time, however, we have a shortfall. It's a real shortfall, and we ask for your consideration.
Questions on this topic, Representative Stewart? I'll get you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your comments about how the block grant puts you in a different category struck me, and would you prefer to not have your funding through a block grant, or are you satisfied with that?
Mr. Chairman, no, sir. We are quite satisfied with our block grant. This over the years, what has happened, there have been a number of exceptions to the block grant, and this is an argument that this particular appropriation for employer-paid benefits should not be part of the block grant. And that it should be managed and held separately. That is not something we have done. It is not something we have ever had conversation with the budget office about before this fall. My message to this committee is simply that it would be our preference to continue to manage our block grant if the rules with regard to how we do that and employer-paid benefits are to change. We will live, of course, with whatever those changes might be. But right now, that change in approach has resulted in a significant shortfall in our EPBs for our employees as a result of this pretty significant jump in health care benefits this year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in your mind, shortfalls are what is driving the request to carve out a segment of your funding out of the block grant, and of course, do you foresee any other shortfalls in the future that would warrant a request to carve anything else out?
Mr. Chairman, nothing that we foresee. I think that's a fair characterization. If in fact we know as we enter into our budget cycle that EPBs are to be managed differently and in a separate kind of an account than the block grant, we can do that. And we certainly don't want to find ourselves in this position again. At this point, it really is from my perspective, it's a matter of trying to level the playing field on this issue with a clear set of instructions about how to proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Nicholas. I guess I'd look at the percent increase here, 19.9 to 22.2 in your health insurance premiums increase. And I'm trying to understand a budgeting process that it's basically done in the light of what's going on in the increase in health costs, which normally outpace inflation substantially, sometimes 2 to 3 to 1, often in double digits. And I'm trying to understand a budgeting process which did not account for 2.3% increase in health insurance premiums at the outset. And that's something that to me seems like I just cannot understand why that's the case. So can you enlighten us a little bit? Did you plan for a 5% increase and it's actually a 7.3% increase or something? But you had to have some plans on what reality was.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, the 22% or 19 to 22% increase was an increase imposed upon us by the group health insurance plan operated by the Department of Administration and Information. It was announced to the University of Wyoming this June, which is after our supplemental budget request was involved, and it was not included in either the supplemental budget, which we took before you, or the full budget, which we took before you last year, or the Board of Trustees budget, which was approved this summer.
Well, irregardless of who announced it and when it occurred, whether it occurred before or after your budgeting process, I mean, I don't know of any business that doesn't take into account the probability that health insurance premiums are going to go up because health costs go up. And it sounds like that in your budgeting process you didn't take that into account. And so I would guess that from my perspective in the future, I'd like to see that analysis. If we're going to be asked to spend an extra $6 million or $10 million, that seems to be a big surprise every year or every biennium. I think we need to know what your budgeting process is and some of the details, because frankly, the budgeting process fell flat on this one. And this is really what the block grant is about, is when you make budgeting mistakes. So you can take that block grant and put it into the shortfalls where you made budgeting mistakes. And frankly, this is just a budgeting mistake that I see.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, this situation has not occurred before, because for the last four biennia, when there were health care increases, there were adjustments made to the EPBs, the employer-paid EPBs in the university's block grant. So for the last four biennia, the situation didn't crop up, because the way the budget was managed provided us with the increase that was necessary to accommodate that change. This is the first time, and it happened after all of the budgets were fixed. This is the first time that the budget office has proposed to us that we should be managing this particular account differently than we have in the past, and that's the reason for it. Had we had that information earlier, had we known that the budget process was going to change, had we been notified, we certainly would have accommodated it.
I need to refresh myself a little bit on the way this works. With respect to the block grant, at the every biennium when it comes in, you go through a reconciliation process with ANI to determine what the block grant is. So you go through your own net to zero process. Some things get rolled in. There are some cost of living items that may get rolled up. Can you give us an explanation, or we can go to the staff, but I'd like to be refreshed on how the block grant gets adjusted every at the beginning of each biennium. Everybody looking at the financial guys.
Do you want to? And I'm happy to defer to the budget office from their perspective.
What we'll do is we'll test you, Don. We'll give you, and then we'll go to Richard and see if it's, or the budget analyst, and see if it's right.
We do accommodate all increases relative to compensations. For instance, retirement changes, workforce services or workers' comp changes, health insurance changes. And this year, I believe our adjustment was approximately $3 million in our line item for employee paid benefits. $1 million of that was referenced for retiree health insurance, and $2 million were all other things, including changes to workers' comp and the like. As you can see by our request, we believe that it will all of those changes actually cost $10 million, $7 million roughly in health insurance premiums, and then the $3 million which we did receive as an adjustment to our budget prior to this biennium. I think the source of the concern, however, does not relate to the changes that were made at the beginning of this biennium, but rather a change in the interpretation dating back for.
I just want to go through the process in general. So every 2 years, you go work with ANI, and you essentially negotiate out your standard budget, which would be your block grant. And so you go through every line item, every appropriation. The issue is, does it get biennialized? Does it get included? You go to your salary components. So there is a negotiation, if you will, that takes place to establish your block grant level.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And as my understanding, then, is with respect to health insurance, when you begin the whatever the block grant is if health insurance was X dollars, and we gave you X plus 1, and the plus 1 gets rolled into your block grant, and that increases the size of the block grant.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Now, with respect to the health insurance component, regardless of how you – I mean, the ANI's position is that the block grant is not a mystery number. It's a number that's developed on your budget, and if we increase salaries, then that increases your block grant. So there's a salary component. Now, if you increase that doesn't necessarily mean your salaries, but if we say, okay, here's $4 million for salary increases, then once that legislative action takes place, ANI says, okay, that's going to adjust your block grant, and there's a negotiation where it's biennialized or how it goes in.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Now, so that in effect, with the block grant, it's not like we don't give you a cost of living or a COLA on it. The only way the block grant gets increased is if we appropriate money for salaries, for benefits, or some other component. If we don't appropriate more money, the block grant stays the same, even though your cost may go up.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And now, I believe that's consistent with other agencies.
That's right. So in that sense, the only way you can increase your block grant is through appropriation. If we don't appropriate new funds to you, your block grant would stay the same even if your cost of running the university is going up 10% per year. Is there any other adjustment that gets made to the block grant other than direct appropriations that we make?
Mr. Chairman, I believe there's an adjustment for equipment consistent with the state's statewide adjustment.
Mr. Chairman, if they got an equipment line item that was one time, we would remove that when we did the next block grant, with the state agency.
So as a practical matter, if your block grant is $200 million and you gave a 3% cost of living increase, if we didn't appropriate it, you'd have to find some way in your budget to manage it, which means there's no more money unless we appropriate. But on the other hand, if we appropriate you a cost of living increase, that drives up your block grant.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Now, with respect to health insurance, a couple of areas. One is, I had in my mind that you have your own health insurance that's self-insured. You're part of the self the state plan. So you're insured like all the other state employees, same, and so the costs are managed with the same?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
All right. So all your health insurance premiums then, and so one of the things that we as appropriations we ought to have a discussion, and that is, are we doing enough to control our health care costs if we're seeing these kind of increases? But having said that, when we have not budgeted historically, actually it's not true. Sometimes we've budgeted for anticipated health insurance increases during the biennium, and sometimes we haven't. This one I don't think we budgeted. Is that right? Or did we have a budget and we exceeded it for all state employees? Richard?
Mr. Chairman, we did build in an increase in health insurance for all state employees, including the university. However, and I believe when ANI comes back Thursday, Ralph Hayes will provide more details, but the increase that happened was far and above what the projections at the time were. That's why we're looking for insurance increases.
That is, I mean, we need to sit down. We have to realize that no matter how it works out, we're paying for the health insurance, or 85% of them. And those increases ought to give us great concern. We need to always go back, and when we get ANI back in, talk about whether or not we're monitoring it. So in this instance, there was money budgeted for in the process for your health care benefits, but the increases were greater than we budgeted. All right. Now, going back to you, President Buchanan, what is your understanding with respect to why those increases occurred, and is there more we could be doing as a state to manage those?
Mr. Chairman, I think those increases are occurring. They're occurring for the state. They're occurring for every person sitting in this room. Healthcare costs are skyrocketing. It's one of the biggest challenges we all have. And this is simply a case in point for the University of Wyoming. What happens when we see that kind of a jump? Then we have to aggregate that increased cost across thousands of employees.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While we were on it, I was going to ask Richard if he remembered a ballpark percentage of what we budgeted for an increase, just to keep my notes congruent.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't have that right off the top of my head.
No. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let Ralph know that we're going to want a pretty good assessment of what's happening, what happened, those benefits, what we budgeted in, how it went up, and what we're doing to manage those health care costs with the size of group we have. And this, by the way, sets the same reimbursement for schools. We are now reimbursing schools based upon what we pay for state employees, whether the schools are in our plan or outside. So whatever increases we have, that rolls into the school foundation program account. So these are huge numbers. Do you have any more? Amy, you go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe I'm not tracking this, and I think this might be a question for the budget office. So if we saw this increase across all of state employees, what makes the university different that they're here asking for the $6 million more? Have the other agencies been able to absorb that increase, and how are they able to? And is it just purely the health costs going up, or is there some other combination of issues working here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there is a request in the ANI budget for increases in health insurance for the rest of state employees. You haven't covered that yet with ANI. That'll be happening Thursday, I believe. But there is another request for additional insurance for all state employees. It's like 2.7 million or some general fund.
So 2.7 million?
Just the general fund share, then that gets leveraged for federal funds. So total will be about 5 to 6 million for other employees too.
Reminder, what we've done, we've taken school districts, kind of isolated out their insurance, UW, community colleges, and the state, so we know every time there's an increase that we're going to increase it across what, 8,000 plus employees or more, and that does actually, it's going to be more than that because it's going to include teachers now. So every time that we have that ratcheting effect, we're paying for the cost. And one of the things that we need to do as a committee is make sure we understand the financial impact of those health insurance increases, because they're huge. And when Ralph comes in, let's have him also talk about, and he might have to get together with Nelson in our office, Dave, to talk about the school side so we get a full picture of what this health care cost is costing us across the board. And you have to also remember that when you start talking about state employee benefit package, part of the benefit package is this health care. It's a good plan. Now, the other thing we got to remind ourselves is that we appropriate the 85%, but if there's a health care increase that comes in between the budget, so if the premiums go up, and we're not there, the cost goes to the employee, not to, because we appropriate a level. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
So we appropriate at the 85% level, but if the premiums go up, that the employees pay for the increase. So we're only appropriating 85%, but generally we've tried to keep pace with 85%, but that can change, and we just have to recognize that impact. Other questions, Representative?
Whatever. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. Dr. Buchanan, since these rates have escalated dramatically, and I think we all have experienced that, can you tell me, as an institution that has so many employees, how you're looking at addressing this issue of other ways of being able to offer insurance coverage? I know that that really dictates from ANI and at the state level, but you somewhat have to absorb whatever that direction is. But I'm certain you must be having conversations on how to address it.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, we have conversations about health care all the time, just as everyone else does. We are one of the larger members in the state system, and we have from time to time over the years had conversations about whether or not there might be attractive alternatives if we were independent. We have not gone there, and at this point I don't think we have any intention of doing that.
But the point that I want to try to make sure everybody understands, since they are in the state system, the health management is by the state system. So if there's going to be a plan, a wellness plan, that's not implemented necessarily by UW. It's implemented by ANI through Ralph Hayes. And so ultimately, we're managing this huge plan. And here, university is an employer, but from them, as long as we're paying the premiums, then their expectation is ANI does the wellness plans. And I guess one of the things we have to realize, and I guess maybe that's a good question to take to you, Dr. Buchanan, that is if we're paying the premiums and there's no impact to UW on wellness, should there be a better time? And do we have you tied in enough to try to keep your population healthy?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I understand the question. Let me try this for an answer. We do have the wellness program. It is I think it's a particularly successful program. We continue to work on increasing the percentage of employees that participate in that program. But it is certainly one that we make active use of and has been a benefit to the UW employees.
Hit again when we talk to ANI. Has everybody got that? If not, let's go to the. If so, let's go to the next topic.
Mr. Chairman, the next topic is a one-time supplemental budget request of $318,658 for laboratory equipment for the new biosafety laboratory level 3. This is equipment that was not contained in the original request. Recall that the BSL-3 facilities, we have two, one in Cheyenne, one in Laramie, The construction of those facilities was oversighted by Rich Cathcart from the State Building Commission. That process went very well, I think, for all of the parties who were involved. Some of the equipment that the University of Wyoming would normally have budgeted for in its capital construction project was not budgeted for through the state budgeting process. The difference is $318,000. This is equipment necessary to commission the BSL-3 to receive clearances and approvals from the CDC. And we have checked the equipment that we had in the old biosafety facility. We have moved everything that can be moved. There is some equipment that either can't be moved or is no longer adequate. And the $318,000 is the request that that we're making for one-time appropriation to get this facility commissioned and up and running as it was originally envisioned. I would add also that, well, we don't have the exact number yet. We do know that that overall project came in literally millions of dollars under budget, and at some point in time, those will be funds from this project that revert back to the state for your future use.
Before questions, I want to make sure. My recollection is that the savings on the joint labs, those appropriations will be added to the – do they go into the CAFCON general account or do they go to the capital renovation account? Well, you look that up. Well, Bill's looking at, but I think that there's that we may take those reversions and add them to the capital complex dollars, and I want to make sure. While staff is looking that up, questions on the lab equipment.
Mr. Co-Chairman, President Buchanan, I believe that when we approved the development and the buildings, that there was a list of the equipment that you needed in order to operate the labs fully. And then, of course, we told you that you had to come back once the building was completed, because I think we made the attempt last year, or I should say you did, to try to get the equipment at that time because you knew there would be reversions. Is that correct? Maybe we can let the staff know that.
Madam Chairman, that's correct. And I do believe the equipment that we're asking for was in our original request as well. This I would attribute this really to a difference in the way we budget and manage for equipment and the processes that are used by the State Building Commission. There are a couple pieces of equipment that we would consider part of the infrastructure of the facility necessary for its operation. It would have been covered had we managed the project. I think Mr. Cathcart was not comfortable given the way in which he manages the State Building Commission to include those, and that's the reason we're here asking for you to consider that $318,000 request.
The other questions on this item. A couple things I wanted to talk about, Dr. Buchanan, and with respect to the this item, do you have you kept track of the reversions on the joint labs? And I guess maybe I was more thinking about the university side of it, but it was a joint lab project. Do you, we can get that update from Rich.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay, we'll get it from Rich. Now, with respect to your project, it was a because it was a remodel of the existing facility. On the Laramie community side, there was some concern that there was no landscaping done at the front of the building. It's in our interest of the community. And I'd asked you to, what is the budget that would be required to landscape the front and move that parking away from our entrance to the Laramie?
Mr. Chairman, I think you're being kind in your description of the facility. It's really a pretty ugly facility right now. We have removed the razor wire from around the Abidrill facility, the round building, and we've taken down all of the unnecessary fencing. It is our intention to move the parking facility, which is presently between the vet lab and the road. We have plenty of space. We can move that facility behind so that employees park behind the laboratory facility, not out in front, and re-landscape the front of that facility between the lab and the road. And our estimates for that are $195,000 to do both the full landscaping and the elimination and construction of a new parking lot behind the facility.
Folks, that all that is directly across from the state park, the territorial prison. It's also on the entrance to Laramie, so during the budget process I wanted to talk about that. One of the options, of course, with both of these is to fund them not out of general fund but out of the reversions that may take place, but that's why it's important to know where those reversions go. And I have for some reason, I have my thought that those savings would go into either the contingency fund at A&I or added to the capital complex dollars. Bill, have you got the answer on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, back in 08 when the lab monies were initially appropriated, and then in 09 when they were amended with the big amount, that language wasn't in place for the big contingency account at that point. It was just the funds revert to the accounts from which they were appropriated. And then it was in 10 that we put that language in. So sweeping any unexpended amounts into the capital complex account. In 10 they do, but not those appropriations from 8 and 9, which is where the lab monies were from. So those
right.
will go back to general fund.
Well, and let's double, when Rich comes in, let's confirm that they agree, because Richard, I think the governor's office had it in their mind that they swept into one of the others. But if they essentially, what you're telling me, Bill, is you believe they just sweep into the general fund.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, like I say, I think the language wasn't added until last year, and so it wouldn't apply to the 8 and 9 appropriations, which is when the big appropriations for those are.
All right, so if there's $20 or $30 million of reversion there, which I think is the range that we're talking about, we need to know that and decide whether we just want to let them revert to the general fund or whether we want to capture them and put them into one of our capital construction projects, of which we've got. And one of these we could do is add it to the capital complex dollars. We could use them for other capital. We could put them water for or whatever, but those are dollars that we ought to at least focus on. And, Richard, you make sure that, please, that Rich brings us up to speed on what the reversions are going to be and make sure that we're all in agreement of where they're directed so we can attend to those. Any other questions on this item? If not, let's go to the next item.
Mr. Chairman, the next item is a request for continuing funds for library collections. Our request was $3.6 million. This is consistent with requests that we have had in front of this committee now for a number of years. I would describe it as the incremental improvement of the University of Wyoming libraries in the near term, consistent with goals we've set that would allow us membership in the Great Western Library Alliance, and certainly over the long term membership in the Association of Research Libraries, which is the gold standard for university libraries in the United States.
Questions? And then with respect to this item, the governor's recommended be reduced by half to 1.8, and questions on this item?
Mr. Chairman, I was just to refresh our memory, when did we, it's been just a few years ago that we, when was that we appropriated money to actually move up to the Great West? Has it been 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
Mr. Chairman, it was about 3 years ago. The dollars that were appropriated at that time were part of what was necessary to get to the Great Western Library Alliance membership. We were successful, thanks to the legislature and the governor, at making considerable progress towards that goal. When we absorbed the 10% budget reduction about a year or so ago, we took a step backwards. Our students stepped forward, voted a tuition increase for themselves to help support the funding for the libraries. We are $3.6 million from being where we need to be for membership in that organization. That was the reason for our $3.6 million request. When we made that request last June, certainly economic conditions were different, and we want to keep that on the radar screen as something we will continue to work on if all of that funding, if we're not able to achieve that funding this time around, we will be back because we're going to continue to work on improving our library collections consistent with the discussions that we have been having with you over the last 3 or 4 years.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on, and then to move to that, the highest level, the national, the research status, what's that going to cost?
Mr. Chairman, I would refer you to your handout, page 10 of your handout.
Oh, yeah.
And I would point to the schools at in the bottom box. Those are schools that are members of the Association of Research Libraries. You can compare their collection budgets up above to UW's to give you some sense. It is an order of magnitude bigger, not something that, we certainly would like to be there tomorrow. I think our estimate has been this is going to take some years of consistent, steady work before we're even in the ballpark. And the first step in that process was the GWILA membership, which is the one that we're seeking the $3.6 million to achieve.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. Dr. Buchanan, what is the disadvantage of only receiving $1.8 million, if so approved?
Madam Chair, it simply slows down our progress towards that goal. We will be back during the regular budget session. If 1.8 is approved, we will be back with a request for an additional 1.8 next year.
Dr. Buchanan, we've got our annual budget. We also have our comparators here for the other schools. I'm just wondering what the annual budgets are of these states today, if you know. I'm assuming that they've probably dropped their budgets down because of their budget constraints, that this might have been a place where they've taken a big hit. And I guess maybe back to the question from the good representative from Casper, as far as if it was one-time dollars, what would you need to get there for the GWAL or LA and your gold standard if you're going to do it in one step, if we ever get to the point where we have those huge excesses.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think it is goes without question that many of the states who have had the strongest university systems are now struggling mightily with budget deficits and budget challenges at the state level. It is also, I think, equally clear that many of these states in the last year or two have seen significant budget reductions to higher education. What we haven't seen is how that has filtered down to individual units within those libraries. It may very well be the case that some of those libraries now are facing challenges with their library budgets, which were not in place before. That information don't have for you, but I think that's certainly not an unreasonable assumption that other states are struggling right now. In order to move all at once, I'm going to say a very crude estimate on my part. I would say, number one, it has to occur in recurring dollars because the expenses that we're talking about aren't one-time expenses. These are the cost of maintaining and collecting more than 1,400 different journal articles on our campus. It's the cost of ongoing collections support to stay current with our collections. It would take something close to a more than doubling what we presently have in our libraries.
Questions. Dr. Gannon, I struggle with this, and I know that you've lost a big advocate with Senator Massey leaving the Senate, but the when I look at these numbers, a couple things comes out to me. One is if you start looking at the total collection dollars spent by some of these universities, many of them have more graduate programs, some of them have medical schools, and the notion that we could or need to keep abreast with some of them seems unrealistic to me, and some of them are much larger universities. So I watched my daughter's experience when she went to the WAMI program to University of Washington. She gets out there and starts getting on their electronic databases from medical schools and things like that, and she says it's phenomenal what you can do just on the Internet at University of Washington, but it's a closed system, so you couldn't get it if you're a UW student. So I guess one of the first questions is are the universities collaborating so that do we need to have all these paper copies, and we're getting measured up by what your paper copies are, and we're called upon to spend a huge amount on paper when a lot of this is electronically available, and why don't the universities just get together and agree that these are the electronic things that we're going to make available for everybody, and here's your assessment.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the universities do that. That's why we have the ARL, the Association of Research Libraries. That consists of almost all of the major universities in the country that have come together to share both their print material and their electronic resources as a way of sharing and saving cost. We are not a member of ARL. We have gone as far as asking for a review and have been informed that we simply don't bring enough to the table at this point in time for them to want to share with us. In fact, about 3 or 4 years ago, we applied for membership in the GWLA, Great Western Library Alliance, and received the same message. And that was really what the impetus that prompted us to get serious about the state of affairs in our libraries and what it was going to take to ratchet ourselves up to the point where we could take advantage of other similarly positioned universities to get online and borrow their materials. About 40% of what we manage and purchase now is electronic, and we certainly have access to far more electronically today than ever before, and I don't think that will change. Also don't think that many of us will be around to see the complete end of manuscript copies. We buy whatever is appropriate, and frequently purchases are made in large negotiated bundles. One of the advantages in being a member of either ARL or GWLA is that those organizations frequently do the bargaining for the purchase of materials, and when you have 50 to 100 universities bargaining with a common voice, it makes for a far more powerful organization than when we wind up bargaining individually or with two or three other schools when we're working with the publishers.
So you have to bargain in with materials. You can't just bargain in with money. You can't just say, look, we'll contribute this to the organization.
Oh, that's correct. Mr. Chairman, I would say fundamentally you bargain yourself into those organizations with materials. Each of them carry a yearly membership fee, but it's nominal in comparison to the cost of the infrastructure you have to have in place in order to get into one of those organizations.
So if we took all the Oil and Gas Commission information and put them in your database. So the only way you can get it is to go through. Then they maybe want to let you play ball.
Mr. Chairman, not something we've talked about.
Representative Pedersen.
Mr. Chairman, that's Mr. President. If when you become a member of the Great Western Library Alliance, when that happens, and if you achieve the full $3.6 million in funding to purchase of the materials, what kind of access, what kind of a percentage growth in materials that you would have access to? Because does 3.8 then really augment $20 million worth of materials if you're sharing with all these other libraries and not purchasing their piece? Or does 3.8 only get us another $1 million worth of materials?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have that specific number. I can certainly try and track it down for you. I've not heard the question asked before. I would tell you it would allow us to leverage the library holdings of better than 35 other universities in this part of the country, millions of dollars, far in excess of the incremental cost of getting to where we can make application.
I want to follow up on that. What's the impact then to the university itself and to the students if we do that? I mean, do we, the next day, do we wake up in the morning and feel better about ourselves, or does something happen?
Mr. Chairman, what happens is the access to more information online and through interlibrary loan, which at this point really is a near instantaneous process. Our students will have access to far more, our students and our faculty, access to far more research-related material and other publications than they do today.
Your faculty, I mean, does that, when you hire faculty, does the quality of faculty, is it affected? Is your recruitment of students, is it affected by any of this?
Mr. Chairman, it is. We have lost faculty that we have been trying to recruit who... This was before our new library facility, but certainly there needs to be substance inside that facility. We have lost faculty we were trying to recruit because they simply didn't think they could do the kind of research and work they needed to, given the library collections and access to collections that we had in Laramie. That has not been a commonplace occurrence. The discussion about what is available and what will individuals have access to is routine and occurs with most every candidate that we bring on to campus for an interview. I think the faculty are probably more sensitized than the students. Many of them are coming from other large ARL schools and are used to materials that we simply don't provide access to at this point. And I think our students may be shortchanged comparably, but they don't realize it.
If we give the 1.8 or the 3.6, whichever the or whatever we give, what is that going to be biennialized? Is that for the second year? The biennium? What's the plan there?
Mr. Chairman, that's a biennial figure.
The 3.6 is the biennial, so you. Looking for the 3.6 to finish out the biennium, and it rolls as 3.6 into the next biennium?
No, Mr. Chairman, that's an annual number, which would be biennialized.
Thank you. Now, when we biennialize it, so that if you go to 1.8 and that biennializes it to 3.6, does that get you to Gwilla, or do you need the 3.6, which biennializes to 7.2?
Mr. Chairman, the latter. 3.6 biennialized to 7.2.
Mr. Co-Chairman, the question I wanted to follow up on that is it 7.2 million though, or is there a grander total than that? Because if you look at the FY 7809, I mean, aren't you adding to it, and then you have to maintain that every biennium? So is the number greater than 7.2?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's fair to say that we don't expect our costs of operating the libraries to ever go down.
Right.
It continues to increase and generally increases higher than at a rate faster than the cost of inflation. We believe that this request is sufficient for us to achieve and sustain Gwilla membership. Our aspirations are ultimately to be in a position to make application to the Association of Research Libraries.
Okay, thank you.
Do the GWLA or the ARL memberships, are they do they exclude bilateral agreements? I mean, from the standpoint that would we make a separate deal with the University of Washington? It looks like they've got the most volumes on this page, and just say, well, we won't deal with the organization, but we'll make a bilateral agreement with Washington
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the answer for you. I can get that answer for you. I can tell you that we have historically had what I would describe as bilateral agreements with Colorado schools, logical partners for us, and we continue to maintain our connection with Colorado schools as sources of cooperation and loan of library materials.
I'd suggest maybe you enter into negotiations with the University of Washington. We had the WAMI program with them. Maybe we can just say we'll for access to your electronic database, we'll give you X amount of dollars to support that, and then they can plug it into their diminishing budget, and they might be, you know, amenable to that at this time.
Mr. Chairman, the next item is a request not for money but for permission. You may recall that some time ago, Natrona County voters approved a general obligation bond of up to $16 million. At the time of those discussions, we had made a commitment to Casper College to enter into a partnership to share one common facility on the Casper College campus. For new members to this committee, our presence in Casper has been in place for more than 50 years. We presently operate a facility on Poplar Street, which is on the opposite side of town from Casper College. Part of our plan would be to sell the Casper facility, recoup those dollars, and roll those funds also into this project. Our request is for our share of the facility in Casper College, and it is seeking permission to use $6 million in historic federal mineral royalties, which we have accumulated, and as you know, which are to be used for capital construction or maintenance, and permission to issue UW revenue bonds up to $10 million for UW's portion of the financing. So the Casper College folks have raised their 50%. Our strategy for our 50%, $6 million we can pay cash, $10 million we seek authorization to bond fund so we can move forward with that project.
Have you, if it's approved, have we got the specific budget language proposed?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're referring to our appendix and also the language at the bottom of page 11. Relative to the joint project. We've included five appendices as potential draft languages for either footnotes or section 300s to accomplish these items. It would basically allow up to $10 million in revenue and up to $6 million in previously received federal mineral royalties, which are sitting in an account at UW currently. Yeah, it's the appendices of your handout. and they begin on page 27. The handout title is Explanation and Background, FY 2011-2012. No, I believe it was handed out on Friday. So beginning on page 27, we have a number of appendices for suggested language.
As we're going through the budget markup, then take a look at these various proposed language to see whether you agree, disagree, or so you need to be aware of those. And this item would be appendices for the Casper Joint Facility, so this would be page 33 then. Now, do you need specific authorization? The notion is you're going to sell the Poplar address and then move that money into this?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Well, We will have to consider construction time and transition. We do know we have some folks who are interested in the Poplar Street facility, have not yet had that appraised. I think our speculation is, I think we're hopeful that it might come in close to $1 million. I don't know that to be the case right now, but those are funds that we would put into this project at this point if this request is approved. I would assume we would direct those additional funds, were they not needed for construction, to the ongoing operations and maintenance of that facility.
Now, is that a the project? You'll have an appraisal of the Poplar facility first.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And are there when you say there's folks looking at it? Are there any governmental entities looking at it?
Mr. Chairman, not that I'm aware of. I have only heard from private individuals at this point.
Okay. Casper doesn't need it or want it.
Mr. Chairman, we're thinking we could have some kind of indoor facility over there.
Indoor practice facility? Or?
No, I'm teasing. It's a pretty good location, though. I think it'll fetch a good sale price, I think.
Mr. Chairman, if I can correct myself, we do have an appraisal on that facility, and I'm going to smile and tell you the appraisal came in at $2
million. $2 million. And then now when the $2 million goes into the project, so $16 million? So it'll ultimately be an $18 million project? Or
Mr. Chairman, no. It will be a $16 million project. We cannot sell the Poplar Street facility until the other one is fully constructed, up and operational, because we've got all of our students taking classes in that facility. Our intention is to sell the Poplar Street facility once we have consolidated our presence on the Casper College campus. Whatever we wind up selling that facility for, we would dedicate to the continuation of our programs and our facilities up in Casper.
Well, I guess the question is, do we want to direct that the proceeds go to reduce your revenue bonds to reduce the debt, as opposed to just adding on to more construction, or do you intend there to be more construction?
Mr. Chairman, we don't intend it to be used for expanded construction, but the revenue bonds will likely be let this summer, and the facility will probably not be sold for several years after that.
Yeah, I assume the revenue bonds will have a prepayment option, so you could actually apply it to the revenue bonds. And
yes.
And I guess that's the discussion to have then is, I mean, it is that if we specify that the sale proceeds reduce the revenue bond, what impact does that have on your plans? If you don't have any plans for the money, I'd be inclined to require that they apply it towards the bonds.
Mr. Chairman, I think the other issue that we have anytime we construct a new facility, as you're well aware, we will have a significant increase in operations and maintenance costs associated with that facility. It would be our intention to use the proceeds from the Poplar Street facility to avoid having to come back and request supplemental dollars for O&M support up to the whatever amount it is that we sell that facility for, but using those funds to buy down our indebtedness is also, I'm going to say, an attractive option and one that I suspect my board of trustees will want to talk about once we get to the point where we have some sense of the total construction cost, the O&M estimates for the new facility, and the purchase price of a Poplar Street facility several years down the road.
What is the term of art? I mean, the other alternative, one other alternative is to direct that it be applied and set aside as a sinking fund for future maintenance obligations. Is the word sinking fund a term of art that if we use it, does that mean that you set aside the $2 million as a corpus and the interest off of it is used to maintain, or is there, in other words, for a period of time we're requiring that any new construction have 10% set aside or a percentage set aside, and so that the idea is they're going to build new schools, the buildings, you at the same time you'd create a sinking fund, the interest of which would be offset the increased cost, so you're paying for future maintenance at the time that you're building it. So if you can't afford the future maintenance at the time you build it, you don't build. So, and we stopped doing that, and I think it was 10%. Who's got the institutional memory? Nobody. Well, we'll look into it. I think that there were statutes that we had created that said any new construction would have 10%. I know that it was, we applied that as recently as the time that I've been in and on a JAC, so we might want to take a look at that and see what the impact would be or the benefit if we said, okay, the $2 million goes into a what we thought of really as a sinking fund for where the you would invest it and the interest off of it would be applied towards maintenance.
Mr. Chairman, that's a I'm going to say at first blush that's an attractive option and a discussion we would want to have. I don't believe we have any capacity to take state appropriated dollars and convert them into endowment without your express authorization.
And we'll look at that. I mean, ultimately, the same topic comes up with the STEM building under the Gov's rec, so we'll be getting there to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Other questions with respect to the Casper project, disposal of the Casper project, anything like that?
Well, just to follow up on that. Operations and management. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. President Buchanan, on the operations and management or the sinking fund, what did you do with the Berry Building? Because we did have that discussion when you were collecting those funds for that endowment, and I noticed that with the governor, too, so I know we're going to talk more about it.
Madam Chairman, we've had numerous conversations about this in the past, and the way we have operated during my tenure as president, when we have or when we build new facilities that are core central academic facilities, we have come to the legislature to request funds for operation and maintenance. When we construct facilities that are other than core or central facilities, and I would put the Berry Center into that category. We have also put the School of Energy Resource new facility into that category. It was our commitment that the university would be responsible for the operations and maintenance of that, which means that we will reallocate an appropriate amount of money from within our block grant to cover those costs, and we will not be back to you for a discussion of O&M increases associated with those facilities. What constitutes a core academic facility or something that falls into the other category, I expect is probably a discussion that someone will want to have sometime in the future. I can tell you that we are presently constructing a new building for the art department that is being paid for with bonds issued by the University of Wyoming. That, in my opinion, is a key instructional facility. That's what occurs in that facility, and we will be back once that project is finished and in place to talk with you about operations and maintenance. But you won't see me sitting in front of you asking for requests for the Barry Center, for the School of Energy Resources, for some of the other buildings that we've been able to acquire through the state matching programs or things of that nature.
All right. Other questions? If not, next item.
Mr. Chairman, the next item is a one-time $2.6 million request for planning funds for the second phase of the fine arts renovation and remodel. Recall that the plan, when the new art building is finished, is to move the art department into their new home, and then to go back to the existing fine arts facility, which is now about 50 years old, and renovate and remodel that facility for the performing arts, music, theater, and dance. This $2.6 million we have already moved through phase one and phase two of the construction process. This $2.6 million request will allow us to bring back to the legislature a guaranteed maximum price during a non-supplemental budget year for that renovation and remodel, and that is what we're requesting. Mr. Chairman, there is no supplemental material for you on fine arts. That request hasn't changed since the last time we met with the committee. I'm actually referencing it on the first page of your handout. It is on page 34 to 39 of the UW budget. Mr. Chairman, I believe it's our final capital construction request was a request for $750,000 for us to continue our planning efforts with both LCCC and with Sheridan College, $450,000 to continue with our planning efforts with LCCC with regard to a shared facility on the LCCC campus, and in Sheridan, an opportunity that has arisen as a result of the Whitney Foundation and work we've been doing with Sheridan College that would look to expand our ag presence in Sheridan, focus largely on range management, range ecology. We were seeking $300,000 basically to look into the offer from the Whitney Foundation to provide UW with a long-term lease for approximately 500 acres of land directly adjacent, directly to the south of Sheridan College, and to consider costs associated with program and facility expansion on the Sheridan campus. Neither of those items were acted on by either the State Building Commission or the governor. It would be my position today that given the change in leadership that is occurring at LCCC, this is probably an item best withheld for some time in the future when there's new administration on board at LCCC and we have an opportunity to see whether or not that administration intends to move in the same direction as Daryl Hammond and others. The Sheridan County opportunity is simply work that has to be done before we will know if moving forward with this partnership is something that would make good sense for UW, for Sheridan College, and if it's something we could afford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Buchanan, you said that you're going to lease the Sheridan 500 acres and build on a piece of leased ground. Is that the original intent of your proposal?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The Whitney Foundation does not want to sell or give us the land, but they would give us essentially a very long-term lease for a nominal fee, such as a dollar. That would extend beyond the expected life of any facility that we would construct there.
But that's not proposed now anyways. The committee members are thinking about proposing or advancing it. Does sound unattractive, but... Represent Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify that you mentioned both Sheridan College and the Whitney, and you also mentioned LCCC. And I just wanted, there is on page 43 of the budget book, architect services for $750. What's related to what here? I guess I got a little baffled at what's going on.
Mr. Chairman, our original request was for $450,000 of that. To be used for our efforts with LCCC, and for $300,000 of that to be used for our efforts with Sheridan College.
And so my question is, when you said you were delaying or waiting on LCCC to see what the administrative changes are made there, so are you reducing that request down to the $300,000 for Sheridan?
In essence, yes, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chairman, if we...
Madam Sheridan.
Madam Sheridan, yeah. Well, what happens if we are not... Of course, this was not recommended by the governor or SBC, but are you able to continue those talks with Sheridan College and Whitney Benefits to see if it's possible?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, If those funds are not authorized, of course we will continue to talk with them. Whether or not we make any significant headway in that effort, I think, remains to be seen. But this sounds to us on its face like a good opportunity for UW to expand its presence in the north-central, northeast portion of Wyoming. We have a good relationship with Sheridan College. And we would like to expand our presence if it makes sense and supports programs that are needed and important. And I think that is part of the discussion that has yet to play out.
No, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, there are four additional items that we'd like to visit about in whatever order you wish.
STEM building, that list.
Okay.
A small item right after there.
Right. If I might direct you to Appendix B on our handout, which is page 29. That is a nice place to identify all of our AML requests in the format of a Section 300, which has been the tradition of this body to allocate those funds. And at the bottom portion of the page, you can identify items 1 through actually 5, which are our requests for $82.7 million of the AML funds, the first of which is the $50 million, which Mr. Chairman referenced for the STEM facility.
Were there questions? Did I miss? Oh, I apologize. With respect to the STEM facility, among other things, if the state of Wyoming is going to start investing in facilities north of Lewis, I guess, when do we have the discussion as to whether or not the city of Laramie will vacate Lewis and turn it over to the university?
Mr. Chairman, those discussions have already begun. The future use of Lewis Street was addressed in UW's 50-year master plan for campus, and that was developed in collaboration with the city. At this point, as properties become available on the north side of Lewis Street, and as we are able to acquire them at or below appraisal, we have done so. There are still properties on North Lewis Street that have either not have indicated no desire to sell to the university or have not yet come available to us. We will continue that process, which is a lengthy process. The city is aware that our intention, as we expand to the north, and we have already done so with the anthropology facility and excuse me, and a number of other smaller operations that we have on North Lewis Street, that it would be our intention to want to modify, alter, or perhaps go so far as to eliminate that street and make sure that we have adequate green space in an area of campus right now, which is largely a very steep concrete building area.
What, have you acquired all the property between, say, 10th Street and 12th Street?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, we own all the land needed to put the STEM facility on. We do not have all of that property. I think there's still a corner property on one of those blocks that we don't yet own within that range of 9th to 12th.
I tell you, if you'd give us a map showing what you own and don't own, so that if we want to put a stipulation, but it seems to me if we're going to start spending now $50 million, we've already put in, what was our investment in the anthropology building?
Mr. Chairman, that was bond funded by the university. I believe it was just under $15 million.
Under 15? So now you're talking $75 million worth of resources and or 65, and we've got students going back and forth. It seems to me that we've probably reached a point where we have as much interest in as a state in Lewis and what happens as the city of Laramie does.
Mr. Chairman, we would agree, and I think would be happy for that consideration. I would simply tell you that the Laramie City Council does not speak with one single voice on this issue. There are folks with plenty of ideas about what happens around campus, and we continue to work with them and enjoy good relations, but this is a topic that is as yet unresolved with the City Council.
Okay. Maybe we can help that along. Senator Von Platern.
President Buchanan, it's $65, $66 million for this building, so what would the time frame be for a request for the difference from the 50 to the 65?
Mr. Chairman, the request for the building is 50. It's not 65. The original request had two components to it. One was the request for the STEM facility. That was $50 million. The remaining request was for funds for us to re-enter, if you will, the existing labs that we have on campus and remodel and renovate those labs, which are now pushing 60 years of age, and to do the modernization on those. In my discussions with the governor and with others, that part two did not achieve any traction, and his recommendation was for the facility but not for the renovation, which no doubt will be on our radar screen sometime out in the future, is a few years out there, since a construction project of this sort is probably a minimum 3 year.
I guess in light, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I did see in either the previous governor's message or something, and I'll try to find it, that it was expected to be 65.8 on total, and if President Buchanan is correct, then it's misprinted in here, and I will try to find that.
Mr. Chairman, we will try and locate that also and make sure there are no mistakes, but our request is not for 65. Our request is for the 50 for the STEM facility.
The next item you've got there is the $20 million, 402.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is for what I would call forward funding for the School of Energy Resources. You will recall the first 2 years of the School of Energy Resources were funded with general funds, and since then they have been funded by AML funds. We have a fair bit of confidence that we will receive, the state of Wyoming will receive at least one more year of AML funds, and it is very uncertain beyond that. So essentially we are planning for that cliff as to when the AML funds would go away. This would be sufficient to fund the School of Energy Resources through the next biennium. We're essentially setting aside funds now to pay for a future known cost. I know this committee has had some questions on the School of Energy Resources, so very generally, that runs off of a $10 million per year budget. $6 million of that keeps the lights on and the employees funded, and essentially $4 million identifies opportunities for graduate students, one-time startup equipment, and seizing research matching funds for those professors. I know this committee has talked about what would it take as a bare bones to keep that going, and the answer is $6 million. It is on a $10 million budget currently.
I want to have two levels of discussion about there. One is the issue with regard to forward funding with AML funds, the obligations for the school, the SER, for 2 years out, that discussion, and then the other one is just the level discussion is the request itself. But so let's talk strategically first about AML dollars. Your assessment is that we'll have one more year of receipts that are locked in, and we've not appropriated those years. Is that what you're telling us, Don?
Mr. Chairman, I would say that we have a high level of confidence that we will get one more year. Congress has not acted because they've had continuing resolution after continuing resolution, but we have every indication that we have one more year of AML funds. Beyond that, I think it becomes very tenuous. The President, President Obama, is opposed to this. President Bush was opposed to this. The chances that we will be able to continue to receive AML funds in the future, given the tone in Congress, is tenuous at best.
Strategically, with respect to these dollars, applying for AML funding to pay for operational cost in 13 and 14, now that you've been in the process of applying for these AML, are there strategic issues with respect to asking for dollars to be allocated for future operational fundings as opposed to just going and saying these are the projects we want to spend on?
Mr. Chairman, we don't see a significant issue there. This is the way we have proceeded in the past. You will recall we've set aside $50 million for the GE partnership. Those funds have not yet been expended. We've set aside $45 million for the YCUS project. Those funds have not been expended yet. So this would continue in that same tradition. We believe that OSM would approve the grant and set those funds aside. I would say, and I've met with Director Cora, there's always a very remote chance that Congress can dip in to unexpended funds, but I have not experienced that.
Now, with respect to the AML dollars, you do have you've encountered a problem, though, with respect to the program that you're working with Senator Bebout with. What's that problem and the bill? What caused the problem and what's the issue there?
Mr. Chairman, we know there are some projects that we cannot use AML funds for. They generally fall into three categories. Number one, if we have a private partner where they want to protect their intellectual property. We don't like to use AML funds because then the federal government owns that intellectual property. The second item is whether when we want to match federal research dollars with AML funds, that's federal dollars matching federal dollars, and we can't get away with that. So we have to swap those funds out so it's federal and state. And then the third category is we can't set aside AML dollars into a savings account because AML dollars are paid to us on a reimbursement basis. We spend the dollars and then send them an invoice, and they pay us the invoice. We don't get it up front and put it into a savings account. The issue with Senator Bevout is to change that savings account into a spend-down account, so it's the third category.
How much money is in that allocation that bill addresses?
Mr. Chairman, that bill addresses $1.5 million. The swap is already completed.
Okay. What was the swap? Remind me.
Mr. Chairman, the legislature appropriated $1.5 million in 2009 in AML funds with the proviso that the university could swap out the funds with state block grant funding. We did so, and we spent we swapped the funds out for purposes of insurance, our liability and property insurance policy, and we are in the process of spending those AML funds for our insurance premiums.
Now, based upon what you do know, if we take that $20 million, if we think we're going to get one more year and we defer this to that next year funding cycle, then is there any reason why we couldn't apply the $20 million to, for example, the Gillette Water Project?
Are you talking about the SER $20 million?
Yes. I'm talking about Romanet 2, the 20. That's for forward funding for 13 and 14.
Sure. You could spend that on whatever you wish.
Good. We just have to pick it up as operational dollars when we pick other operational things.
Sure. If you want to spend these dollars on projects outside the University of Wyoming, that is certainly your prerogative.
Yeah.
Well, my question to you is to, if we have the Gillette Water Project and we don't know exactly what money there is, can we apply for that money and put it into a water account to be used for that, or do we have to identify a project in order to get those monies sprung loose?
Mr. Chairman, you do have to identify a project, and you can't set it into an account because, it's on a reimbursement basis. So you can't take $20 million and put it in Water 4. You have to identify a project which will have receipts that you can invoice the federal government.
All right. Other questions on the $20 million forward funding 13 and 14? Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, I didn't find my notes until just now about the $50 million for the STEM building. Could I ask a question about that? Thank you. Mr. Chairman and President Buchanan, I remember in our initial discussions about funding for this building, I asked the question about additional ongoing expenses for this, and you assured me that there would be no additional expenses for L&M for this building. Now, our new governor's recs carve out $3.5 million for operation, and so I guess a twofold question. Do you feel confident you can build this facility with that much less, and how do you respond to your original comments that there would be no additional O&M showing up for this facility, that you felt you could just use monies you allocate now for your labs? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stewart, my recollection of that conversation is a little different, and it was that there would be no additional faculty necessary, that we would not incur any additional personnel costs. Our estimates for operating costs of the STEM facility range in the $400,000 to $500,000 range per year. I am aware of the Governor Mead's recommendation of that $3.5 million to be set aside. And we certainly can construct and put in place a STEM facility for $46.5 million. And that supplemental $3.5 million, if you will, would help us certainly in that transition.
May I jump in for a second? Dr. Buchanan, would you take a look for us? There was a time where we were requiring set-asides for maintenance, and so there must be some funds out there that are generating or spawning revenues for set-asides. Would you look to see whether there are such funds that are sinking funds established out there, how much they are, what kind of interest you're getting on, and what type of dollars those, or how those monies are being used?
Mr. Chairman, I believe two of the facilities that he spoke to previously, the Berry Center and the SCR, did have that language in the Section 300, but the language was subsequently modified so that it is no longer a sinking fund, and it basically the statute indicates, or the session law indicates, that those operations and maintenance shall be handled within the University of Wyoming's block grant. So there is no sinking fund.
Well, I think going back, it seems to me like in the last 15 or 20 years there were some buildings that there were sinking accounts. Apparently not.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think one of the things that we have discovered through the use of the state matching funds is asking a potential donor to endow an operations and maintenance fund is a non-starter. We did try, and we had absolutely no luck in soliciting that kind of support from our donors. Even when those donors were fundamental to the capital construction.
The sinking fund, it was a bill run by, I think, Representative McComey 3 or 4 years ago that did affect some state projects, state-funded projects, but I don't know about the university.
But I that go is back, not, this, that statute, that is not a new idea. It's been resurrected.
Right.
It's come alive. And it seems to me that somewhere out there it got implemented. Maybe it never got implemented, but I wonder if there are some buildings out there with some sinking of funds, and maybe at the state level. Bill?
Mr. Chair, I believe community colleges did.
Mr. Chairman, there's some permissive language in statute allowing it for state buildings, but there's not any statutory requirements that I'm aware of. And you're right. I mean, over 15 or 20 years, there's been various building projects different institutions and so forth that have tried to establish them, but my recollection on this university stuff is the same as Don's. I'd have to research it a little bit, but
I'm curious.
I recall it basically the same way Don does in this case.
I wonder if there's any sinking accounts that were ever established anywhere, and if they're working. I wonder if we could take a look and maybe ask around and see if anybody knows of any sinking funds.
Mr. Chairman, I believe our bill for the tech center and the LCCC money and stuff all had an amendment in there for a sinking fund on those.
We'll have community colleges up here. We'll ask maybe, but I'm not sure that Jim will know about that. But let's put the feelers out. I'd like to know if it worked. I mean, in a sense, you could say, well, what difference does it make whether you put it, you could create an endowment at the foundation to say, okay, these monies are earmarked for maintenance, but I don't know. There's different ways to do it. You do have this issue of who has the monies, who holds the monies, what kind of investments they're going to be utilized, and who's going to be investing them. If you're going to have a reasonable shot at doing that, the foundation is already engaged in investment activities. And I guess part of the thought is that comes to my mind is if we're going to set aside $3.5 million for ongoing maintenance, and there is a sinking fund, who invests it? Where is it going to be invested? Who's charged with that? Maybe we're better off to put it in the foundation where that's one of their normal activities. I assume, Dr. Buchanan, you don't have an investment group inside the university whose job it is to watch investment income and make sure you're getting money.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have that group inside since we have consolidated UW's endowments with the UW Foundation. I think Vice President Vinzant certainly pays very close attention to what happens to our investments that are held by the foundation. Were that $3.5 million placed into an endowment and managed by the UW Foundation at its current rate of return, it would yield about $140,000 a year.
Well, folks, let's go ahead and, Doctor, we're going to come back at 12 or? We'll be back at 12. Now, the House members, I mean, I know I slowed this thing down to make sure I'm going through these elements. If you guys want to go faster, that's fine. I mean, I kind of like learning this information, but I know that the consequences, we're going to be here later in the evening because we have to get through these budgets before Thursday. But so you guys, I mean, I'll talk to the Senate folks to make sure that they're okay with this pace, but I know the pace is slower, but if it's information you don't think you need, we can speed it up. If it's information you want, then we'll keep this pace and we'll just be here later. Okay? All right, 12 o'clock, does that work for you, Dr. Buchanan?
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir.
I guess it has to.
Yes, sir.
Thanks.